is Ella Kate Marisi, and you are listening to More Than Child's Play with your host, my mommy, Lacey Marisi, and my aunt, Nicole Surgeon. They are authors, therapists, and most importantly, mommies. And man, can they talk. So sit back and relax and learn from their village. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of More Than Child's Play podcast. This is your host, Lacey Marisi, speech-language pathologist and co-owner of Milestones and Miracles. And today, you all, I am so excited to have on the podcast, Miss Carrie Ebert. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. So for those of you that aren't familiar yet with Carrie, or maybe even for those of you that have heard of Carrie, I'm going to read, introduce you officially to her by reading her bio to you. Carrie Ebert, MSCCC SLP, is a pediatric speech language pathologist in private practice in the Kansas City, Missouri area. She received her bachelor's degree in 1993 and her master's degree in 1995. Carrie is a therapist, consultant, author, product developer, and nationally recognized speaker who gets paid to do what she loves most, talk. She specializes in early intervention, apraxia, and autism, and has dedicated her career to helping young children achieve their maximum potential with speech, language, and social emotional development. So just real quick, last year when all of us were kind of spinning on our heels while we were being thrust into this role of becoming virtual therapists, I started searching for guidance and inspiration to build upon my coaching skills as an EI, speech language pathologist. You know, I was confident in my ability to provide services within the homes of children I was working with, but I knew with virtual only services, which at the time we weren't sure how long it was going to stay like that, I knew I needed to refine and strengthen my coaching skills to be effective with this virtual platform. So that was when I began paying more attention to social media accounts of other SLPs that worked in early intervention. And I already followed Carrie's social media accounts, but I just started paying a little closer attention to what she was posting. And I started visiting her website a little more often. And that's when I discovered and took one of her courses for continuing education credit that she offers on her website, carrieebertseminars.com. I also listened to some podcasts that she did with Michelle Dawson. And then I took another course of hers that was offered on speechtherapypd.com. And from all of that, I was given the confidence and the skills I needed to make this virtual coaching gig work and work pretty well, if I may say so myself. But I definitely credit the success of my ability to be an effective virtual therapist. I credit that to really working on my coaching skills as an EI therapist, because I'm not sure that I would have had that success had I not laid that groundwork and again, refined my skills as you know, in using the coaching model. So from that, I just wanted to make sure that our audience knows about you, Carrie, that they also then can benefit from your wisdom, from your specialty in the coaching model and delivering services via the coaching model in the early intervention population. And just to throw this out there, Carrie is an SLP, as am I. However, her courses, her, you know, advice, wisdom on this topic is beneficial to all early intervention providers, any discipline, not just SLPs. So if you're an OT or a PT or developmental specialist, I want you to stay with us, keep listening. I promise you, you're going to benefit and walk away with some good skills to strengthen your practice as well. Okay, so let's go ahead and get started with our conversation with Carrie today. And our conversation is centering around partnering with parents through collaborative coaching. So to begin this conversation, Carrie, I think it's important for our audience that we just clearly define what coaching is.
Sure, and I think that's a great place to start because we use that term as though it's a term that everybody understands, right? And so when we talk about coaching, I think there are some myths about what coaching is. I think that some people think that coaching is just talking to parents, right? That, oh, you're just going to talk to parents. That's not a skilled service. Talking to parents is not a skilled service. And so we have to really acknowledge that what we're doing as Birth to Three providers is we are engaging in services that are delivered in a manner designed for the way infants and toddlers learn best. I think we can all agree that infants and toddlers don't learn the same way that older children and adults learn, right? So we have to acknowledge that we can't go into a session with a 20-month-old and work on things directly with them and then leave and expect that child to just naturally start embedding those strategies into their daily routines every day. So what we really want to do is focus on transferring our skills and knowledge to the caregivers, to the parents, to the grandparents, to the nanny, whoever that primary caregiver is. Okay. So I'm going to give you two definitions of coaching. I'm going to give you Rush and Sheldon, and they are really kind of big names in the early intervention world. Dathan Rush is an SLP and Melissa Sheldon is a physical therapist, and they have done a lot of work on coaching and transdisciplinary therapy and all of that. So this is their definition. Coaching is an interactive process that promotes a caregiver's ability to support a child's participation, learning, and development in everyday experiences and interactions across settings. So it sounds lovely, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very lovely, but it's a lot of words. So yeah. I really like to simplify things. My explanation, you can call it a definition, but my explanation of coaching is simply this. Coaching is a method for transferring our skills and knowledge to the caregiver.
Yes.
Isn't that powerful? I mean, that's what it is. It's not just sitting down and having a conversation with parents, okay? It's about transferring our skills and knowledge to the family and helping them figure out during which routines during their day they can embed those strategies into their daily interactions with their little learner. And so that's really what coaching is. And I like to call it collaborative coaching because we must never forget that we're the experts in child development and communication disorders, you know, whatever your degree is in. We're the experts in that, but the parent is the expert on their child, their family, their routines, their culture, and their concerns. So I always say it takes two to tango, and that's why it's this collaborative coaching. We work together, or like you mentioned when we first started, we partner with parents, and that's really what coaching is about.
Absolutely. And so when you start working with a family right out of the gate, do you give them a very clear definition of what to expect? Because I think we sometimes skip that step, and then what families expect from us looks very different from what we do. And then there's confusion and maybe a little frustration. And so what's your advice for us as EI providers on that?
I love that you're asking this question because this is really important. I think that a lot of times what we do as providers, whether you're PT, OT, speech, you know, developmental specialist, no matter what your profession is, I think we go into working with a new family with an assumption that they already get it, that they already know what's coming, that somebody has given them kind of the lowdown of this is what services are. And I think it's really important that we have a very honest conversation. And I like to start with, this is what EI is, this is what EI isn't, okay? I like to really talk about, this is my role in early intervention. And I wanna talk to you about what your role in early intervention is. And I think it is so important that we acknowledge that in order for this collaboration to work, that parents have to have an idea of the blueprint. You know, what is early intervention? Because I promise you this, if the family has ever heard the word therapy before, if they've ever had a child, an older child, you know, who's gotten therapy, or maybe they fell and hurt themselves and had to have physical therapy, anybody who's had therapy knows the role of the therapist. And they think the role of the therapist is to fix deficits.
Yes.
Well, that is the medical model. That is not the early intervention model. So I always ask parents, have you ever known anybody who had any type of therapy? I actually ask them, I want to have a conversation. Oh yeah, my daughter had to fix her R sound. She couldn't make her R. She had to go to a speech clinic. Okay. So what did you do during that therapy? Oh, I waited in the waiting room, you know, or I sat behind a one-way mirror. Okay. So now I'm getting a picture in my head of what you think therapy is. Because if we don't have this conversation, you guys, then parents are going to be very confused why all you do is come in and just talk to them, or why all you do is come in and just play with their child. So what we have to do is we have to lay the groundwork. We have to let them know, look, this is early intervention. This is a very specific program authorized under Part C of IDEA. We don't have to go into those specifics, right? But we have to know that. So one of the things that I created is my Coaching the Caregiver in Early Intervention handouts. I'm showing them to Lacey. I'm like, I know nobody can see them. But, and I have three sections in the handouts. And the first section are handouts just for the EI provider, just to kind of give EI providers an understanding of what your role is, give you some of the lingo, you know, really for new providers. providers maybe who don't know a lot about early intervention. The second section are interactive handouts to use with parents. And the first handout in this section is just called the Early Intervention Team. And it says, welcome to the world of early intervention. And it kind of talks about it. And I love using handouts for this reason, because I create talking points. It's not like those handouts where it's like paragraphs in the, you know, you leave it for the parent to read. These provide talking points. And what it allows me to do is be able to talk about a topic and have talking points so that I don't get lost. Because does that ever happen to you where you're like, I really want to talk to them about X, you know, or Y or Z, some topic. And then once you get going, you kind of lose your train of thought, or you can't quite remember what the research said about something. So I'm a big believer in handouts to kind of keep me focused, make sure I get all the points in there. And so this kind of talks about, I have a handout in here too, what the parent's role is in early intervention. And I actually have parents, it's a parent agreement that they actually, I have them initial it so that they understand what their role is. So I have, as I've been an EI provider for over 20 years, and I just kind of, after well over a decade of doing this, I got tired of kind of playing the game, you know, where I just kind of expected parents to know what to do. And, you know, I got frustrated when they didn't do it the way I thought they should. Another great question to ask, Lacey, is this: what do you expect to get from our time together? What do you want our sessions together to look like in early? You know what I mean? How are you going to know what they want until you ask the question? What do you want our time together to look like?
Absolutely.
And I think it's powerful.
Yeah. And I think I'm sure in one of your trainings that I took, you talked about asking the parent how we should share information with them too, because everybody learns differently. Everybody prefers information to be shared in different ways. So that's something I've been implementing and has made a huge difference. Not everybody wants an email sent at the end of a session with, you know, whatever recommendations. Some people just, our intervention note is enough. Some want an extra text midweek to remind. You know, you made a suggestion about leaving a post-it note with you know, some parents might appreciate that to put on the fridge. So I think you make great points in that as EI providers, we need to be asking these questions up front to set up the family and ourselves as therapists for the most success we can have in providing these services.
Yeah, I mean, even something as simple as in my parent agreement, it tells the parent specifically when to cancel and how to cancel. Like, I mean, I think we assume that everybody just knows how to do that. I mean, nothing's more frustrating. Let's pretend we're not living in a pandemic right now. Let's go back to the time when we used to go to people's homes regularly. But there's nothing more frustrating than showing up and nobody's home. You know what I mean? Or having somebody no-show you because they got the date wrong and things like that. So we need to let them know, this is how you contact me. You know, I don't respond to text after 7 p.m. or before 7 a.m. Like I've realized that I think one of our biggest issues in early intervention is that we are too fly by the seat of our pants. There isn't enough structure in our sessions. You know, when you work in a clinic or you work in a school or a hospital, everything's pretty structured. Like the patient comes to you, they're there for 30 minutes. You know what I mean? They have to leave after 30 minutes. Like we're in their home, we're on their turf. The child may be napping when we get there, so we have to sit there and wait. You know what I mean? There's so many variables. The TV could be blaring when we get there. We may have to get the iPad away from the toddler. You know, so this is where we need to have conversations. Like, I noticed that when I arrive every week, you know, you have to get that iPad away from him because mom doesn't want him on the iPad while we're there. And I notice it upsets him. Do you think that maybe there's something we could do to, make that transition a little easier? What I want the parent to say is maybe I need to take the iPad away from him a half hour before you get here, not as you're pulling into the driveway, right? So what I've learned is I can't tell you what to do, but I try to open up a conversation. What is something we could maybe do to make this, you know, the beginning of our sessions go a little smoother so that he's not so upset? And so I really just think having very strong communication skills, which isn't it ironic, Lacey, that we're speech language pathologists and we're communication experts, and sometimes we're not very good at communicating?
Yes, it is ironic.
It is, because I think of our biggest issues is parents don't know what to expect, especially if you still live in a state where you bring in a bag of toys. Now, we haven't done that for years here in Missouri, but if you show up with a bag of toys and sit down on the floor and start playing with the child, what is the parent supposed to assume? The parent assumes you are here for the child, making their presence and their participation optional. So if we're going to indicate that your presence and your participation is optional, then we don't have any right to get upset with the parent when they wander away and go cook dinner or, you know, go get on their phone or whatever. have we made it crystal clear what we're there for? We can't just say to a family, so I'm going to be here to coach you on ways to help your child. And they go, okay, but that doesn't mean anything to a parent. So then you show up for the first visit and they're like, okay, so teach him to talk now, speech person, you know what I mean? And I'm going to say, he does better when I'm not in the room. So I'm going to sneak out and I'll come back the last 5 minutes and you can tell me what we worked on. Yeah. If that's happening, then you haven't had the conversation yet. Right. So we have to learn how to have the conversation. And that's the first visit. The first visit has nothing to do with the child. The first visit is what's our time together going to look like?
Right.
Right. What do you hope to get from our time together? How do you want to communicate in between sessions? You know what I mean? We're going to go over all this stuff. And I think, again, we assume that the service coordinator already took care of that, you know, in the IFSP meeting, or that somebody already did that. Well, I promise you, parents have to hear these things more than once, because it's not a typical way to do therapy, right? It's not what they're expecting. They think you're going to come in and fix their child's deficits and hand them a child who's, you know, ready, or, you know, has school readiness skills. I don't know. So I think that conversation is going to be very important.
Absolutely. Setting those clear expectations from the get-go. You won't regret it if you do it. Okay. So why is coaching such an important component of early intervention, Carrie?
Well, I think the main reason is because very young children don't wake up in the morning and make decisions that benefit their development. Who does? Who wakes up in the morning and says, okay, I really have to work on my child's core strength, or I really have to work on bilateral integration, or I really have to work on, you know, intentional communication or joint attention or nonverbal imitation? The only person who's going to wake up and make decisions about embedding specific strategies into daily routines is the caregiver, is the adult. Okay, so we can't work with a two-year-old on Monday while the parent is playing Candy Crush Saga, you know, on their phone, in another room, or sitting on the couch, not paying any attention. So we can't work with that toddler on Monday and think that they're going to wake up on Tuesday and practice their skills, right? It doesn't happen that way. And if we are the only people who provide services, let's say as the EI provider, and let's say this is a kid who happens to get speech an hour a week, and let's say OT an hour a week. So the parent thinks, well, 2 hours a week, you know, this child's getting therapy, so that's all they need, right? And if it's not enough, then I'll just ask for more therapy, right? So then they want more services. The problem with this scenario is that everybody is assuming now on the team that I am the agent of change, that it is my direct work with the child, that 60 minutes a week, that is going to affect the child's development. All you have to do is look at the math and recognize that doesn't make any sense at all. Toddlers are awake an average of 87 hours a week is what I think I figured, because most toddlers are awake an average of 12 hours a day. 84 hours. So they're awake an average of 84 hours a week. And if I'm there 1 hour out of those 84 hours, how in the world can I be the agent of change? So I actually use like a jar of M&Ms, and I actually counted out 83 white M&Ms. If you've taken my course, I probably show that in the course. And I explained that these 83 white M&Ms represent all the time that the caregivers are with this child, parents, grandparents, you know, daycare provider, whoever. And then I drop one red M&M in, and I say, and this one red M&M represents the 1 hour per week I spend with your child. There is no way I can be the agent of change. Okay. You are, what we're trying to do, you guys, is find a way to put the onus of responsibility where it belongs. And that is on the caregivers. Okay. In the medical model, the onus of responsibility is on the therapist. You better believe it is. Okay. It is. And that's why under the medical model, we see kids 3 times a week, right? Or we see patients 3 times a week. If they're in an acute care setting, we see them 5 times a week, right? I used to work in a skilled nursing facility when I first got out of grad school. You saw patients every single day post CVA, right? After having a stroke. We're not doing rehabilitative therapy. This is habilitative therapy, and there is a difference. And I don't think in grad school we get taught the difference between rehabilitative therapy, which is where you're regaining lost skills, versus habilitative therapy, which is where you are teaching skills that are not being acquired, you know, on their own. And there is a, you know, they're totally different jobs that we have, if you will. So that's why it's so important that we're using coaching. Is we have to acknowledge that infants and toddlers don't raise themselves.
Exactly. And we know the research tells us that coaching is the best service delivery model for this population, ages birth to three, because kids this age are learning through everyday occurrences, those daily routines that are repetitive and occur and repeat themselves day after day. So we know that's how they're learning. They're not learning just from sitting on the floor for 1 hour a day and playing with mom or dad with a shoulder. You know, that learning occurs all day long. So that's why we know the research tells us these kids learn through daily routines. So that's why, and they learn best from their primary caregiver or parent, the research also tells us. So that's why we know this model is best for this population and why we have to kind of relearn. For those of us that went to grad school many years ago, mm-hmm. I wasn't taught anything about coaching, you know? And a lot of the colleagues I work with, I think, would say the same. I don't know if grad school now includes a coursework in that. I hope they do, or eventually they will. But I think, you know, a lot of us in EI have really had to seek out, you know, the coursework, the information surrounding this model of service delivery.
It's really about routines-based intervention. That's a buzzword. And also, I love the term embedded intervention. So what we do is we don't leave homework. This is really important. Let's see, we don't leave homework for families because homework indicates that you need to do something extra, that you're going to have to find extra time in your day, set aside extra time to work on something special. We don't leave homework for families in early intervention. What we do is we embed strategies into already existing daily routines. So let me give you a couple examples. Let's say diaper changes. This is a great routine to embed strategies into. So let's say we're working with a young toddler and the parent's primary concern is he really doesn't follow directions. You know, they give him one step directions and he's not following them. And so there's maybe some concerns about receptive language development. And so I say, okay, well, let's look at some routines during your day. Let's think of a routine that happens, you know, more than once during the day. And what do you think about diaper changing? How many times per day do you change little Joey's diaper? Mom says, well, you know, maybe 5, 6, I don't know, somewhere maybe 7 on some days. Okay, well, let's just go with the low end of that. Let's say 5 times a day. So during diaper changes, if we could embed strategies for following one step directions, like let's think of some of the directions you could give. Go get a diaper, lie down, throw it in the trash, pull up your pants. I don't know. We could pick one or two. My point is there's lots of one-step directions to be followed during this routine. So if we can embed that into the routine of diaper changing, the child's going to have 5 opportunities a day to practice following one-step directions in a highly repetitive, very predictable routine, which means the child will likely start experiencing success pretty rapidly. So if the parent does it 5 times a day, 5 times 7 days a week is 35 times. 35 times a week times 4 weeks is 140 opportunities to practice following one-step directions. Or I could come in once a week and practice it, and that would be 4 opportunities per month. So all you have to do, you guys, is start doing math with families. And if you can show them that it doesn't add up for us to be the agent of change, that the primary learning opportunities for your child happens during your day-to-day activities. And so what we're teaching is we want the child to gain meaningful skills in meaningful ways with the meaningful people in their life.
Absolutely. Right? Now, the one drawback, I'm not strong in math, Carrie. That's why I chose the field of speech language.
Exactly.
But my phone has a calculator. So
yeah, you just see me use my calculator. I'm like, oh, let me do the math here real quick. Yeah, no, I don't do math either. But I'm like this kind of simple math that's more of a visual just to help them. Because I promise you guys, if you don't go down this road, here's what parents are going to do during your IFSP review meeting. They're going to say, well, little Joey's not making a lot of progress. So I was wondering if you could come twice a week. And you're only coming once a week. Could you come twice a week? I'm going to tell you right now, I could come 3 or 4 times a week, and it's still not going to be enough repetitive practice. That in order for a young child, especially a struggling learner, you know, who is behind in their development, in order for them to make progress and meet milestones and meet their IFSP outcomes, somebody's going to have to practice with them in between sessions. And that's why I really like to differentiate. And I have a handout on this that actually shows the little drawing. But when I am there that 1 hour per week, that counts as the direct service, right? Whether it's provided through coaching or whether you're doing hands-on therapy, it's still the direct service. So that's the therapy in the technical term. But what happens between those early intervention sessions is the intervention. That's how I like to call that. So I provide therapy, parents, caregivers, grandma, grandpa, nanny, daycare provider, they provide the intervention. And so I always explain to parents that I don't care if your child performs for me when I'm here, because a lot of toddlers don't perform on command, right? The parent's like, oh, tell Miss Carrie your new word. Come on, Joey, you can do it. Tell her, you know, and they're like, I promise he says a new word. I'm like, well, I don't really need him to perform for me, but parents want to prove it to you, right? So they're trying to get their child to perform. I say, what I really want to make sure is that you have some strategies to focus on, that we can practice you using these strategies while I'm here to give you, to be able to model it for you. Intentional modeling is a huge component of coaching, so that I can model it for you. Then you can practice with little Joey. I can provide you with feedback because I want to make sure you're comfortable with using these strategies between our therapy sessions, between our early intervention sessions. And so it is something that we really have to focus on. And before I forget, I just want to say this because I know I'll lose my train of thought. And I just did. See, I knew I should have wrote it down. Okay, ask me a question because it's going to come back to me. I had something I was like, oh, I need to tell her. And then I don't remember what it is. Oh, I know what it is. Now can I tell you? Okay. So there is this myth in early intervention that coaching, like I said, is just you talking to the parent, right? Or they'll say, well, coaching is all hands off. You know, you don't do any direct therapy with the child. Here's the deal, you guys. Coaching is as hands-on as it needs to be. As an early intervention provider who works specifically with kiddos with suspected childhood apraxia of speech, who works with kiddos, you know, who are suspected to be on the autism spectrum, I don't know what strategies are going to be effective until I actually work directly with the child. So I really call it a hybrid approach. When I am working directly with the child, that is my assessment. I do an assessment every time I'm with the child. I have to assess what they're stimulable for, whether strategies are effective. But what I've learned to do is when I am working directly with the child is talking to the parent about what I'm doing and why. Right? I'm explaining, literally narrating why I'm holding the book in front of my face instead of having him sit on my lap. So that's that. It's called intentional modeling. And when you document in your progress notes, you should be documenting your skilled services. And part one of your skilled services is intentional modeling. I don't really care what toys you use. I really could care less because you shouldn't be using only toys. You should be working during snack time. And, you know, getting the mail is one of my favorite routines to work on, because think of all the different skills we can work on when getting the mail. So I can talk about routines-based intervention for hours and hours, but I just wanted to mention that anybody who says coaching is hands off, that you cannot work directly with a child, that is not true. Okay. I have to work directly with the child. I have no idea which specific strategies or cues are going to be effective. I don't have anything to coach the parent on until I have worked directly with the child. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It does. Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to go back to something you mentioned a little bit ago. What the strategies that we leave for the parent, implement into those daily routines should not feel like homework, right? I love that. And I've really, since taking your courses again last year, you reminded me of that, because I think I'd kind of fallen down that rabbit hole. And I started realizing, oh my gosh, you know, who wants to do something that feels like extra work on top of raising a toddler who has delays, possibly other children in the home, working a full-time job? So I appreciated in your courses that I took, you reminded me of that. And I appreciate you sharing that with the audience, because that's so important. What we leave for the family to work on with the child should not feel like extra work, should not be homework. It should just so naturally blend into their daily routine. And
again, tell you what, what we technically call that is a joint plan. And the way I end every early intervention session is by asking this question. So based on what we've talked about or practiced today, what do you want to focus on until I come back next week? That is literally the question. I'm going to repeat it for your audience. Okay. Based on what we've talked about or practiced today, what do you want to focus on until I come back next week? Because I literally am going to make them tell me, not me tell you. And that's where we get into the difference between coaching and consulting, which I don't know how far we want to go into this, but consulting is where you tell the parent what they're going to do. You do leave homework. You actually dispense professional recommendations. And then you moan and groan when you come back the next week and they didn't follow through with your homework, with your extra work, with the stuff you told them to do. Coaching is about creating a joint plan. And so for some families, I'll end the session by saying, so today we talked about offering choices, you know, instead of asking us no questions. We talked about helping little Joey learn to follow one step directions, you know, whatever it is. I'll give them like maybe a recap. Some families need a recap of maybe two or three things that we focused on. And I'll say, so of those three things, which one do you want to focus on with little Joey this week? So now I'm allowing them to tell me. Do you see how different that is from me telling you what you are going to do when raising your child? And so this is huge, you guys, because now the onus of responsibility is back on their shoulders. So now they're going to have to put into words, and some families, I do have to help them, you know, walk them through. So once we come up with the strategy they're going to focus on, now when during your day do you think you can focus on that? Let's try to find a routine that happens maybe more than once a day, or where this, you know, strategy makes the most sense. And so then we have to spend thoughtful time coming up with that. And then what I love to do, I know nobody can see me, but I'll show Lacey. I love using lined sticky notes. And I like the ones with the lines on them, so I can actually write, and I actually write joint plan, and I'll put the date 4/13/21, whatever the date is. And then I literally write it. A joint plan should be one specific strategy embedded into one specific routine. So what we as SLPs, I can't speak for the other disciplines, but what we as SLPs tend to do is we leave strategies that are too vague, too broad, too general. So this is what a strategy that I probably used to leave years ago, where I would say, okay, so what I want you to focus on this week, mom and dad, is just labeling things in little Joey's world. Sounds easy enough, right? Everybody's like, it's a great strategy to build his vocabulary. Do you know how weird that is? I mean, think about the strategy in and of itself. So what you want mom and dad to walk around the house going, clock, light, TV, camera, phone, table, chair. I'm sorry, that's not how anybody learns language. Nobody learns language by hearing words out of context like that. So if we want to build little Joey's vocabulary, we talk about when is a strategy or a routine during the day where we can embed a strategy for labeling things in the environment. Maybe during bath time, hand him a washcloth, and you could say, you know, wash your ears, wash your tummy, wash your toes. That's great for body parts. Maybe at the grocery store, mom says, well, we like to get out of the house several times a week. We go to Walmart or Target or, you know, the grocery store. Great. So as he's in the cart, you can hand him items and label them as Joey puts them in the cart. You see, that now is a great joint plan, because it's one specific strategy embedded into one or maybe two specific routines that you can write on a little sticky note. And all of my families know the lingo, the yellow sticky note. And so when I first start with a family, I'll text them halfway through the week and say, hey, how's the yellow sticky note going? And when I show up the next week after, how was your weekend? It's how the yellow sticky note go, because you better believe that I'm going to follow up on this. This is the parent's accountability. This is how we create accountability, is by establishing a joint plan after every single session.
Absolutely. And I know, again, you taught me that when in your courses that I took, the joint plan, and it's really made a world of difference in my practice, because sometimes as an SLP who loves her job and loves working with infants and toddlers, I get really excited during a session and I say, let's try this. Oh no, we should try this. And this could work and this could work. And then we get to the end of our 45 minutes, 60 minutes. And I start reviewing with them. Okay. We talked about X, Y, Z, and it's so many things. And I see that look of overwhelm come over the parent's face. And then I say, okay, well, let's come up with a joint plan. What do you think you can implement, you know, in what routine over the next couple of weeks until our next visit? And then they can prioritize and kind of bring me back down to earth as, you know, Lacey, look, again, they're busy parents. They can't do all of it.
Think about, you know, depending on what agency you work for, sometimes there's like, I don't know if they're called soap notes anymore, but you know what I mean? Like maybe your agency has a note that you have to leave. It used to be in triplicate where you had to sign it and the parent had to.
Triplicates in West Virginia.
Oh my word. Okay. So you know what I'm talking about then. So under the plan, right? What happens is what early intervention providers typically do is we leave what I call a laundry list of recommendations. So, okay, I want you to do this, this, this. So the problem is you use the perfect word. These parents are overwhelmed. They're looking at this going, holy crap. Like I barely have enough time to get through my day and do the things that absolutely have to be done. And now you want me to do seven things. Oh, the SLP left seven, the PT left six things, and the OT on her note left five things. That's like 19 new things that you want. You think I am a parent am going to be able to implement 19 new strategies? Like it's overwhelming and it's not even appropriate, you guys. So yes, we get excited and we have tons of ideas, but what we have to get really good at is helping parents prioritize based on their concerns, not our concerns. We don't raise the child, right? We don't know. That's why one of the first questions, and I again have this in my handouts, but how my sessions start, in one of the questions I like to ask after how was your weekend and all of that is, start with the positive. Tell me something that went well this week. tell me something that little Joey did that you're proud of, right? So I let them brag on their kiddo. That's such a great way to start a session. And then after we talk about the good stuff, I say, now tell me what was the most challenging part of your week. What was the most challenging part of the week for you and Joey? What is a routine where Joey really struggled? And so that's then what we're probably going to focus on for the session. Because when using the coaching, the early intervention model, I don't come in with a lesson plan. I have no idea what we're going to talk about until I find out what was your most challenging part of the week, right? And so that is a really important question, because what I need parents to understand is you're the expert on your child, your family, your routines, your culture, and your concerns. I am here to help you problem solve. That is literally all I'm here to do. I am a skilled provider, and I am here to help you problem solve strategies, okay, to embed into your daily routines. But I'm not the expert on your family, certainly not the expert on your child. And so until you can find a way to get parents to buy into that, they are going to continue to place the onus of responsibility on you. And what they're going to do is give you credit when their child makes progress. Oh, Miss Carrie, you helped Joey learn to talk. You're such an amazing speech lady. You know, oh, Miss Carrie, you're so good with kids. And they want to praise me, right? No. Because then the same thing happens when the child doesn't make progress. Well, Miss Carrie, you've been coming for a year and little Joey's still not talking. I guess I need to know what are we doing? Are you going to increase services? Like, you see what I mean? They want to praise me when he does well, and they want to like increase services or find out what I'm going to do differently when he isn't doing well. I don't get any of that because I don't raise the child. This is not the medical model of service delivery. So I'm not here to fix deficits. This isn't a deficit driven model. That's not what this is. And I feel like early intervention providers, once again, don't even know what our program is, right? I mean, there are providers who will say, well, this is a parent-driven program. We have to do whatever the parent wants. If the parent wants direct therapy, we have to provide that. This is not parent-driven. This is a family-centered program. The family can't drive the bus because the family doesn't know the law. They don't know Part C of IDEA. So we don't say it's family-driven. It's family-centered. There's a huge difference there, okay? We have to make sure that the services we provide fit under what the law says we should be doing. You know, what is Part C of IDEA? And we have to be able to, and again, I have handouts explaining this. This is what the law says. Early intervention can't be everything to everybody. Here's what some clinicians want. Well, if the family wants direct therapy, I want to be able to provide direct therapy. If the family wants coaching, I want to be able to provide coaching. Sorry, that's not how this works. If the family wants direct therapy, if they want to sit in a waiting room and want somebody to work directly with their child, then access your insurance benefits and by all means go to a clinic and access the medical model of service delivery. There is nobody stopping a family from doing that. But EI can't be everything to everybody. I would argue there are some diagnoses where children do need direct therapy. I'm going to be very honest with you. I think there are some diagnoses where those kiddos actually do need to see a physical therapist or an occupational therapist, speech therapist at a clinic setting. But that's not early intervention. So we have to stop trying to be everything to everybody. This is what it is. This is a family-centered program where the emphasis is on, here, let me just read this to you really quickly. I just have my, okay, here is the mission of early intervention according to Part C of IDEA. Early intervention builds upon and provides supports and resources to assist family members and caregivers to enhance children's learning and development through everyday learning opportunities. Nowhere does it say that it is our job to fix deficits identified on a standardized test. That is not what early intervention is. So I feel like until providers are better trained, until we actually understand the law that we are providing services under, it's going to be really hard for people to buy into coaching, families and providers alike.
Absolutely. So I just want to go back to us for a second. You were talking about when we were talking about being specific with the strategy, embedding it into the daily routine. You know, I'm finding when I'm very intentional about making that joint plan with the parent, leaving just one thing to work on, very specific with what routine to work on that strategy, you know, in a certain routine. Parents then are having success. Their confidence is boosted. They start to realize that they are an equal partner, if not the most important person on this team for their child. And then we get more buy-in to the coaching model and we can build upon that success. So that's like early on, I work hard to get that success, you know, going, that confidence built in the parent so that they start to realize this model of service delivery works. It works.
I love that so much. One of my, you know, I have a lot of these little one-liners as a professional speaker, but one of my favorite one-liners is confidence breeds competence. Yes. Confidence breeds competence. And that is why everything that we do, we should start with small moments of success, whether it's with the child as the learner or with the adult as the learner, but we need them to feel success, right? Once you taste success and you realize, oh my gosh, I can do this with support. See, we're the support. You can do it with our support. And that's what we're here to do, is to provide support to you. I feel like since we're talking about early intervention, and since you've taken my course, Lacey, you know this little analogy, but way back in 2007, when my home state of Missouri started moving away from direct therapy and moving into more of this, family centered, where it's really about coaching and, routines-based intervention, I was really struggling back then with, is this really for me? I love doing direct therapy. I love working with kids. I have a very specific skill, and I don't know if I want to give that up. And I was really questioning, maybe early intervention isn't for me. So I spent a weekend really just kind of contemplating life. You ever have one of those where you're like, is this what I want to keep doing? I mean, they're going to take all my toys away. I'm not going to have a bat. There was this fear of how in the world do you provide therapy services with no therapy materials? And so I was panicked, and I was contemplating, and I was sitting, and I was thinking, and it made me think of this saying, give a man a fish and he eats for a day. Teach a man to fish and he eats for a lifetime. And that has stuck with me all these years, because I now recognize that my job is not to give parents fish, to fix their problems for them, to fix their child's deficits. My job is to empower families, right? Is to teach them how to fish, to teach them how to select high quality toys for their child's birthday, to teach them how to interact with their child in a way that will support speech and language development. It's really about parent empowerment. And when you start looking at it from that perspective, it really does change everything. We're not here to fix deficits. That's what we were trained to do in grad school. Yes.
Yes.
Trained to fix deficits. Okay. But that is not what this is about in early intervention. It's about meeting families where they're at. Yes. It's about becoming experts on their routines. Every family has their own routines. It's about understanding their routines. It's about building on the parent's strengths, the caregiver's strengths. It's about asking thought-provoking questions that forces parents to reflect on their current parenting practices, and then asking them to refine the way they interact with their child. Reflect and refine are the two primary components of coaching. Refine the way they interact with their child to support and enhance learning and development. And that is what we as clinicians, as EI providers, we need more help. We need more training on how to do that, right? What are the skilled strategies that we use when we're coaching?
Yes, absolutely. And parents, if their only impression of therapy was a medical model of service delivery, then they do take their child to the outpatient clinic for PT to be fixed. They do take their child to the doctor to be fixed. They look to those people, those providers, as the experts, and they're kind of just in the background to receive whatever advice or to take whatever, medicine their child needs or whatever. So when we are able to go in, lay the groundwork early, define what coaching is, develop that, explanation, develop that relationship early on and empower them, then they start to feel confident. That turns into competence. And we're just not, I think when you empower parents early on to realize that they can be the agents of change to help their child, to help their child develop skills that maybe they're lacking or delayed in, then you're empowering that parent for the life of that child.
Yes.
Right? It's just that small window of us seeing them in EI.
Right.
That's powerful to me, because I can think back to support I had from, family members, friends, colleagues, when my kids were struggling with something. And that gave me the confidence early on to know that I could make a difference in my child's life. I had that power within me.
I love it so much. One of the things I always talk about in my coaching course is that we have to acknowledge all the different relationships that have to be fostered as an early intervention provider, right? There's the relationship between us and the child, which is the easiest one, and it's the one that we're very good at. But the problem with that relationship, or I guess not the problem, but the issue is that that's a temporary relationship. That is not a lifelong relationship. So why would I ever put a temporary relationship over the lifelong relationship, which is the parent-child relationship? Let's be clear that the professional parent relationship is essential for coaching to work. Okay. It has to be. You have to build a relationship, and all relationships are first and foremost built on trust. So if the parent has any trust issues, you have, and trust is earned, Trust is not given. Okay. Trust is earned. And so that is why I also want to say, you, when you walk in and start with a new family, I don't start coaching on visit one. I am getting to know the family. And I tell them these first couple sessions are going to be you getting to know me getting to know your family, your child, your routines, your concerns. You know, I really want to get a good feel for how your day goes. You know, what a day in the life of little Joey looks like. I want to come at different times each week so I can observe different routines. Does that make sense? It's so different from the medical model, which is, okay, I come at Tuesdays at 2 o'clock. I know everybody would love to have a schedule like that, but in early intervention, if the family is concerned that the child is struggling with something related to mealtime, then we should try to come during a meal. If they're struggling with transition from, I don't know, getting off the school bus for, you know, maybe they go to some little daycare or something. I don't know. Maybe they're, you know, I don't know if there's a transition issue. We need to try to be there when there's a, I mean, I've met families at Walmart because the child won't sit in the cart, you know, or struggles transitioning or whatever it is. So I think it's so important that we don't try to like set in stone. We always see this family the same time. We need to let them know. I know that that's how we try to do it. I get that. It's almost necessary for scheduling, but we need to be flexible so that we can, you know, come during different routines and observe different interactions, especially with different family members. I want to be there sometimes when big sister is there. So that means after school hours. Sometimes I want to be there when grandma babysits, which is on Tuesday, not Monday. You know, I want to be there when dad's there, which may mean a late afternoon appointment some weeks. So it's just really important that we remember that this is family centered, right? And that the mom, who is often the go-to caregiver in most cases, that she isn't burdened with the total responsibility of the joint plan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So we talked, you know, a good bit about getting that buy-in from parents, setting up that early success, their confidence and competence and belief in this delivery model of coaching. So you touched on a little bit earlier, but I just want you to revisit. So the difference between coaching and consulting, because again, I think a lot of us are doing consulting and think we're doing coaching.
Yep. I'll go back to my own story. When we switched over to coaching and most of us were pretty negative, but I had decided I'm going to be positive. I'm going to have a good attitude. And I was doing this coaching and every night I would come home from work and I'd be like, it doesn't work. I give these families things to work on. I come back the next week and they always have excuses. Oh, we forgot. Oh, it didn't work. Oh, were we supposed to be doing that? Oh, you know, I mean, and I was like, I just don't understand. I'm giving you the strategies. You're not following through. Coaching doesn't work. I just need to be there to do it myself. And then I started reading. I have a whole shelf of books that of my reference books just for early intervention. And I really started studying coaching and what coaching is. And I had this huge aha moment when I saw definitions: coaching, consulting, mentoring. I mean, there were these five adult learning methods. And I was like, holy crap, I've been consulting this whole time and calling it coaching. No wonder it doesn't work. So in consulting, the provider is considered the expert. Okay. And so when you are considered the expert, your job is to assess the situation, to analyze the problems, and then to come up with solutions to those problems and start dispensing professional recommendations. Okay. That is really the role. I really would like to find this slide in my handout on this. It would help me so much if I had it in front of me. But it's not there. Okay. Let me just find it here real quick because it's going to help. So sorry, I'm just, as I'm scrolling through my entire 2-hour seminar, I'm like, I know it's in here somewhere. But I really think it'll be helpful. So consulting is top down. Okay. I'm just going to do it without my notes. Is top down. So you are the expert and your job is to, you know, the parent is down here, you're up here, and your job is to dispense professional recommendations. And it rarely works. Now, I will tell you, I am a consultant and I do have agencies around the country who pay me to come out to their center. I have a center in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and I go out there when it's not COVID times, usually at least once a year. And they have me observe their classrooms. This is a 3 to 5 year old, okay, a building. And so for early childhood. And so I analyze advise the kids in this certain classroom. And we then go sit in a conference room and I tell them what I saw the issues were. And these are some things that I would do to change the situation, to make it work more smoothly, to make the child have more success. So they are paying me to be a consultant. Does that make sense? So I am, that's different. But when you're working with families in early intervention, our job is not to dispense professional recommendations. So here's what happens when we are consulting. Let's say the parent says, I say, what was your biggest concern this week? You know, what did little Joey struggle the most with? Oh, I just cannot get this boy to eat more than like 2 bites of food. Every meal, he only eats like 2 bites and then he wants out of his high chair. And so I'll say, well, why do you think he isn't, you know, wanting to stay in his high chair? Mom said, I don't know. He's just so distracted. Oh, okay. Well, have you tried turning the TV off during mealtime? See, this is called the have you tried habit. This is what we do as consultants. Have you tried, having the other kids eat with them? Have you tried feeding him at different times during the day? Have you tried having him sit in a booster seat instead of the high chair? Have you tried? So that's consulting. But you guys, when we change to coaching, this is huge, okay? Coaching is about having a conversation with the parent, and we ask open-ended questions that forces them to reflect on their child's development, forces them to reflect on their current parenting habits. So what's your biggest concern? Little Joey doesn't eat more than 2 bites. Why do you think that is? I don't know. He's just so distracted at mealtime. Here's what I say through coaching. Oh, what things have you already tried to reduce distractions at mealtime? And then I sit silently, which is so opposite of what most of us want to do. We think we have to be dispensing professional recommendations the whole time. So now all of a sudden the parent is taken aback a little bit. Like, she just asked me an open-ended question that requires a response. The only way the parent is going to be able to respond is to reflect on, holy crap, what have I tried to reduce distraction? So now the parent can say, well, you know, I don't know. I mean, he's just distracted all the time. The other kids, I tried just having little Joey eat by himself because I thought that would help him focus. But then he's so busy watching the other kids, you know, because maybe she has a daycare or whatever, that he wants down to be with the other kids. So then I just sit there and stare at her because silence, awkward silence, makes somebody say something. And she goes, maybe I need to have the other kids eat with them. See, now she came up with it. I promise you this, when the parent comes up with the strategy, they're more likely to follow through with it than when I say, well, have you tried this? Have you tried this? Here's what I want you to try. I'm going to give you a laundry list of strategies and I want you to try all 9 of these. Nobody can try 9 strategies in 1 week, right? So instead, we start asking open-ended questions. They're called reflective questions, right? In my handouts, if you take my coaching course, I go through all the reflective questions that we ask. But the whole point of coaching is to get the parent to reflect on what they already know or what they've already tried. And then together, we're going to collaboratively problem solve to come up with new strategies for the parent to try. So that's the refine. Coaching is about reflecting and refining their parenting strategies.
Awesome. And getting comfortable with the awkward silence.
You have to, because if you don't just sit there, because when I ask an open-ended question, everybody hates that weird silence, right? And I just get really good at just putting my chin in my hand and just sitting there and like waiting for a response. I mean, because I don't know, I'm not the expert. I don't know. And you have to be okay with parents saying, I don't know, because that's their most common response. When you ask an open-ended question that forces them reflect, why do you think he does that? I don't know. Well, so now we have to open up a conversation. Well, does it happen any other time during the day? Right. These are the reflective questions. What happens when dad does it? Right. So you have to start asking these questions to help the parent really think about, wait, does this only happen during one routine? Is it the way I'm wording it? Is it the time of day? Is it that he's overly hungry? I mean, I don't know, it depends on the situation. The point is, open-ended questions, open-ended reflective questions are the skilled strategy that makes coaching effective. So if you don't know what reflective questions are, there are awareness questions, analysis questions, alternatives questions, and action questions. And you have to use them. And that's why in my handouts that I created, I actually have a cheat sheet, if you will. And if I'm going in to see a family, I always have my reflective questions in my in the front of my handouts, because I'm like, I still need those. I can't memorize all those questions. There's dozens of questions, but you have to be able to ask them in order to start the collaborative conversation.
Absolutely. And those reflective questions feel less harsh and less judgmental. Absolutely. You know, when we're practicing from that consulting model, we hold ourselves as the expert and the parents hold us as the experts. So any of that advice we're dispensing is like a top-down kind of approach, right? Have you tried questions make parents think, oh, I've been doing this wrong. Why haven't I tried that? Oh, right. Why didn't I think of that? I mean, I've seen that because I've done that. Have you tried? I've really had to work to get away from that. Because I ask those questions in a loving, non-judgmental way, but I can see how they're received in a judgmental fashion. So then the parent kind of starts to shut down and feel bad about themselves. We're not building confidence then.
No.
That reflection, forcing them to take a closer look, a more critical look at what they are doing, what has worked. Uh-huh. It makes a huge difference.
It does make a huge difference. And there is no parent shaming. We don't ever want to go down that road of making parents feel like you've been doing it wrong. There is no right or wrong to parenting. I mean, and what works on Monday might not even work on Tuesday. You know what I mean? So it's really about giving grace to all of our families, but it's about the skill we're actually teaching. If you really want to get down to the nuts and bolts of this, is critical thinking. That's really what this is critical thinking skills and problem solving skills. So can I give you one last example? Cause I know we're getting short on time here, but let's say you have a family and the child is on a feeding tube. Okay. And so maybe you go one visit and the mom says, you know, my husband and I have been talking and we really think it's time for me to go back to work at least part-time. And so I really need to find a daycare that'll take a child with a feeding tube. Okay. So what I could do is tell them the daycares that I know in our city that will, you know, that have a nurse, you know what I mean? Like I could tell them, but how is that going to help them learn how to problem solve and advocate for their child in the future? So what I'm going to ask is, oh, well, how are you going to go about finding a daycare that will take a child with a feeding tube? So not all families are good at critical thinking. So this is the skill we're teaching. Well, I don't know. I was hoping you could just tell me. Well, maybe you play dumb. I don't know. And say, well, I don't know of any. So how do you think you can go about, you know, finding that? I mean, I'm happy to help, but we need to figure out some strategies here. How are you going to get this information? And then I sit quietly because I've got to give the parent time to think. And maybe the mom says, maybe they live in an apartment complex or something. And maybe mom says, well, I know my neighbor takes her kid to a daycare. Maybe I could ask her, ding, ding, ding. So that's a great place to start, right? So, I mean, I don't do this, but I mean, my point is I'm teaching you how to think. I'm teaching you how to critically problem solve. Okay, so what if she gives you a name? Then what are you going to do? Are you going to go to the daycare? Are you going to call them? Well, maybe I could get on their website and see, okay, that now we're getting somewhere. Okay, so what if they say, no, we don't take a child with a feeding tube? What are you going to do then? Oh. You see what I'm getting at, you guys, because here's the problem. In early intervention, we are family-centered. We are only there till the day before the child turns 3. And then the family will never be part of a family-centered program again. Because once you get to Part B of IDEA, it is educationally focused. It is, it's family-friendly, if you want to call it, but it's not family-centered, okay? So if we don't teach critical thinking skills and advocacy skills in early intervention, that should be our main focus. Then what are parents going to do when we're no longer there? Parent says, oh, little Joey's birthday is coming up. What toys should I buy him, Miss Carrie? I know you're really, you know, a lot of good toys. Sure, I could give you a list of toys. I could get on Amazon and put them in your shopping cart for you and do it for you. Or I could teach you how to select high quality toys. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference there. We could talk about what makes a toy a high quality toy. I have a whole list. It's free on my website under free downloads. I think I put it out. Maybe it's not there now. I put it out at the holidays, but how to buy a high quality toy. That is transferring my skills and knowledge to the parents. It's making sure that they know how to buy high quality toys, not just for Joey's 3rd birthday, but for his 4th birthday, his 5th birthday, his 6th birthday, when Miss Carrie is no longer a part of their life. Okay. So I think if we could remind early intervention providers that our job is to teach parents how to critically problem solve and how to advocate for their child, we have done a huge service for the family.
Absolutely. I'm so proud to be an early interventionist, aren't you?
It is. And I hope, if nothing else, people listening, that they feel reinvigorated to be in early intervention, because we are the least respected. Let's be honest. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, all I can talk for is speech language pathologists. The most highly respected SLPs are those who work in a hospital, because if you work with doctors, you must be really smart. Then it's the people who own their own clinic. You know what I mean? Because if you own your own clinic, you know, you must be really smart. And then you get the people like at the university level. You know what I mean? If you work in higher ed, I mean, you're clearly brilliant. You know what I mean? And then you get the poor school-based SLPs, but they're higher than us, because then we're the lowly early intervention SLPs, because all we do is just play anyways, right? So, I mean, I feel like we have to, we do this because we understand that most of brain development occurs before the third birthday. Those of us who fight for early intervention, we don't do this for the paycheck. That's crystal clear, okay? We do this because it matters most, because we can change the trajectory of a young child's development. We can empower parents and caregivers to support this child, and it can absolutely alter their entire life. So yes, we should all be proud to be an early intervention.
Absolutely. And take this responsibility and this privilege seriously, and work to refine our own skills as interventionists, providing this coaching model of service delivery. And I thank you, Carrie, because you have helped me do that in the last year, and you will continue to help me to do that. And I hope everyone listening takes advantage of all that you have to offer. Can you just share with everyone how the best way to get in touch with you is, your social media accounts, your website?
Sure. So Carrie Ebert Seminars, it's C-A-R-I, E-B as in boy, E-B-E-R-T, seminars.com is my website. And you can get to everything you need from there. You can check out all my products and services. I am on Instagram at Carrie Ebert Seminars. And then my professional Facebook page is Carrie Ebert Seminars as well. So I do daily posts related to early child development. I love using social media as a way to share information. If you go to my website and scroll just down a little bit, there's a section that says free downloads. I do free downloads all the time. I just found a way to create infographics. And so now I'm like having just the time of my life. I used to be a scrapbooker, you know, back in the day when you printed photos. So yeah. I don't do that anymore. So now I found my creative outlet. So I am creating handouts like almost on a daily basis now. So, and I just decided to make most of them free. And my download that is for EI providers, coaching the caregiver in early intervention. These are interactive handouts. I think there's 54, 55 handouts. So I spent over a year creating those. So, you know, I do have a lot of products like that, but I promise you the people who have purchased that tell me that it's changed their whole ability to do their job, because what I've given you is structure to your early intervention sessions. And I think that honestly, that's what we need more of. Parents need to know, this is what an early intervention session is going to look like. We're going to start with this, we're going to do this, then we're going to practice this, and we're going to end with this. And I feel like if we just create more structure, parents are going to have more buy-in.
Absolutely. And just let them know the expectation of their role in the part of early intervention. So thank you. Thank you so much again for joining us. Everyone, I hope you again visit Carrie's website. Follow her on Instagram and Facebook. And again, just benefit from all the knowledge that she has to share to strengthen your practice as an EI interventionist. And the families that are listening, I hope that you kind of learned what to expect in early intervention, and talk to your providers. If they're doing something differently and you want it to change, talk to them. Give them this podcast to take a listen to. Hopefully
that's right.
And learn. So, okay. Thank you again, Carrie, for joining us today. Thank you everyone for listening in, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of More Than Child's Play podcast. Please follow us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Milestones Miracles, and on Twitter at Milestones M.